Welcome to Steppin' Out of Babylon, produced by Sue Supriano. Babylon is everywhere. It's the isms and schisms not only within the system, but within ourselves. Let's unify, stand aligned, and step out of Babylon.
Everybody, my name's Sue Supriano, and I'm really happy today to be talking with Ralph Page and Melba Smith. Ralph Page is the executive director of the Federation of Southern Cooperatives Land Assistance Fund, and Melba Smith is the program director of the Mississippi Association of Cooperatives, which is part of the larger organization, the larger federation. And this is a really important stuff to talk about because small farmers are going out of business, which means they're really losing their livelihood and the way that food is, I don't even know what to call it, grown is hardly even the word anymore, but we're going to talk about that. And so we need to know about this, and it affects all of us. So, Ralph Page, would you start by telling us what it is that the Federation of Southern Cooperatives Land Assistance Fund does?
Well, we are a nonprofit organization founded some 30, in fact, 35 years ago as of this coming August. We were found out of the civil rights movement. We are an outgrowth of that, really, because most of the work that was done in the rural South region in the Black Belt during the civil rights movement was with low-income people. A lot of people did not have jobs and income. And, of course, Black farmers at that time was losing land. In fact, they're still losing it at an alarming rate. Black farmers since they have lost over the past few years almost 15 million acres of land. And that this is primarily where most of the land is located in the rural South in the Black Belt region, Alabama, Mississippi, Georgia, South Carolina, Florida, and it's a valuable resource. You know, once we lose land, it ain't growing anymore, and we're not buying it back.
And what does that mean to lose land? I mean, how is that happening? I can imagine, but maybe you could tell me a little bit more specifically.
I usually sum it up. It was lost, strayed, or stolen. And most of it was stolen. And I say that, in fact, many farmers did not have access to markets, so they had no way to generate income, nor access to capital. They could not borrow money from banks, and especially they could not borrow money from the old Farmers Home Administration, who had and still has a history of discrimination when it comes to lending, and also USDA when it comes to program assistance for Black farmers. And it is a historical thing that has gone on, and that has been the prime corporate in the loss of Black land in 1982. You know, the farmers had been trying to borrow land and borrow money to buy land and get resources from the government, just to find out that has been a growing amount of discrimination, and farmers have complained but not borrowing money, just to find out that their complaints were stowed away and they were not able to complain. And based on that, they had lost, they continue to lose land till today.
Isn't there been a court case that you've been winning recently?
Well, I guess you can call it winning, but there's certainly been a court case around discrimination. In fact, come out of the 1982 decision by the government at that time to destroy those records where people have complained about discrimination, and based on that, Black farmers, sued and won a suit, probably the largest class action suit in the country, that allowed farmers to redress some of the issues. Now, you know, some farmers received monetary compensation for discrimination. You know, some received $50,000. Some farmers received, a few received even more. But that's very little to address the problem. I think what happened at by winning the suit, the real thing is said that this government did discriminate, which had been denied forever, and it's still being denied. And that was the real win. The farm, I don't think there's enough money to pay any farmer for the loss of livelihood, the loss of land, the loss of a way of life in rural communities. And yet there are unresolved issues of what, you know, about whether the farmers can go back and borrow money, whether they would really be made whole. So where there's a lawsuit, where it seemed like on the surface we've won the lawsuit, but underneath there are, there are a lot of unresolved issues as to what will happen. Does this, in fact, give black farmers back the 15 million acres of land? Does this, in fact, once and for all, stop discrimination, even though it does, in fact, say it admitted being done? Does it address those kind of issues? And that's the thing to be proven. And I doubt in this case or any case that may come up later that it would be that it's been proven that they would be made whole. And I think my personal feeling that these farmers should be made whole, that the black community should be given the land land back. After all, you know, we have been in, we have been the one in the community who have built, who've tilled the soil, who have made have made this work. And now we, you know, it's a sad day when a segment of the country don't own a piece of it. You know, if we're not taxpayers, we're not owners, then the question is, what are we? You know.
Well, Melba Smith, I'd like you, if you would, to talk about what's going on in Mississippi. Ralph Page, you were talking about really destroying a community, destroying a way of life. Maybe you would comment on that right now, please.
Right. The Mississippi Association of Cooperatives, as Mr. Page mentioned, too, it's in its 30th year of existence, too, and it is a nonprofit organization, and it is part of the Federation of Southern Cooperatives. So we're an extension of the Federation's work in Mississippi, and we're talking about looking at rural communities on a holistic basis. We're not looking at one area above another area, although primarily our work is with cooperatives used as economic development tools to build rural communities. Whatever area that they have a problem or need, then cooperatives can speak to that. Just as our name says, we are the Mississippi Association of Cooperatives. We have about 15 groups that are part of our association, and it also includes community development credit unions. So there's a financial institution that's being made available to rural communities through these credit unions where they can borrow monies from themselves because they are owners of the credit union.
Mm-hmm. So that kind of, I mean, and I assume when you're talking about changing way of life, you're talking about the community kind of falling apart. I don't know if you want to say anything specifically about
right.
that.
Right. We're maybe not falling apart, but it has not come together in meeting those needs that are so desperately there. For instance, there may not be a grocery store in a local community, but the people, because of, as Mr. Page has said, because of their incomes, one or two people cannot organize and operate a grocery store. But yes, 50 families could do that, and that's what we're talking about, pooling their resources together in order to meet a need that's in that community, not just for myself, but for people that live around us. And so we're getting them to working with rural people in rural communities to catch hold to a vision that they can change their community from within rather than from without.
Mm-hmm. That's great. Explain a little bit about how credit unions work.
Well, credit unions are financial institutions, as I mentioned, and they are organized on the same basis as a cooperative is, one person, one vote. Those people who actually become members of the credit unions are actually the owners, and then they serve on committees, whether it's the loan committee or the supervisory committee or whatever. They themselves make those decisions about their money that they actually put into the credit union. So, and what I really like about the credit union, other than them being owners, is that they are able to finance programs and projects that they feel are needs in their community, rather than having someone else to say, we don't make those type loans, we can't do that, that's too small of a loan. We've heard that on many occasions. But then you can borrow monies on your own signature, and the interest rate is much less than it is at any other, we call them other financial institutions, but you can borrow your own money. And I think that's something that also builds hope in a person. It also develops a person to begin to see themselves as somebody rather than having to depend on others. Others, they can depend on themselves and borrow their own money and repay themselves. In essence, that's how it works, although it is a business. It has to make money, and we teach that. We're teaching, as Mr. Page mentioned, people to have visions to say they can do it rather than we can't do it. We need you to come in and help us do it. But what we like to do is to work with these, with the rural people, to let them make the decision as to what their needs are. And then we find resources to help them implement those needs. We don't try to go in and tell them they should do this, they should do that. They know best what their needs are within their own communities.
Right. Self-determination, that certainly makes a lot of sense. Ralph Page, would you explain in some more detail about what you mean by cooperatives?
Well, cooperatives is a way of poor people can build wealth. Mm-hmm. Just simply, it can address problems that you cannot address by yourself. This is when a community or a group of people get together for the common good. In farming, black farmers have not had access to market, mm-hmm. and to markets in a way to go. So if they pool the resources, the 10 acres of vegetables here, five there, they're able to market it as through a marketing cooperative, and we do that. We're able to help that group pool it and ship truckloads, and they get able to make a living off it or to increase their income and livelihood. At the same time, they're building their own business, and they couldn't do that. They're building their own marketing system, and we're doing that. We've shipped vegetables throughout this country where farmers would come together and pool, and without the Federation, they could not do that. Another form of it is custom cooperatives. This is where farmers make, you know, can't afford a truck or a piece of equipment by themselves. If four or five come together, they can, in fact, ship on one truck. And that normally they can do it. If they did it, they wouldn't be large enough. So they can address problems as a group versus trying to go it alone and can't make it. And this has, and it's been proven. It's been proven in this country. It's been proven in Canada. It's been proven all over the world that this system works. And it is a system. I would like to say, and I've always been an advocate of the government not just having cooperative services under USDA, but having what is equivalent to the Department of Commerce or Labor, that is a Department of Cooperatives that address it, provide the an economic backbone, provide markets, provide development opportunities. Because if you look worldwide, most, I think in some countries you'll find there are departments that are cooperative, ministers of cooperatives. There are departments of cooperatives. And this is a main web business. Last year I had the opportunity to go to Quebec, Canada, to look at the Desjardins credit union movement. Amazing is the amount of credit through a credit cooperative. Mm-hmm. You know, and I can remember talked about it earlier. When a farmer wanted a loan, there were only two ways to get it. One is from a loan shark, which is a predator-type lender, or the other one would be from the seed store, and they would own the store. At the end of the season, they would just go deep in debt. You know, they would borrow from the guy. They would have to pay interest. They would have to pay on the loan for the seeds. They would have to share in the crop proceeds from the crop. Then they would be partners with the guy. So the guy at the food seed store would get the man would get it three times, and they can't go that way. So we need, you know, we need, and cooperatives, credit cooperatives address that because they can pool resources and borrow from the neighbors. And, of course, many times we have to look outside for people who would like to make non-member deposits into credit unions in order they would be protected and they want to get it. We do a lot of that. We have 18 credit unions within the Federation that have access of over $20 million, small but significant because we're talking about poor people, poor communities. We have 30-some credit agriculture marketing cooperatives that we provide markets. We provide what they call, I think in California, community support CSA systems. And at home, we are talking about direct marketing. We are talking about rural urban markets where people come in and buy from, you know, in inner cities. They come to the farm or the farm come to them and provide markets and so forth for farmers. So it is a way to get an economic change. It's a way to build wealth. It's a way to address ownership for poor people in rural communities. And it is the best way that I know that a community can do this. It's a way that we can do change. It also, it is the best effort for change, and it's the best effort that people have right now for the future. Cooperatives really represent a best effort for the future.
Well, it's always sounded like a really good idea to me, and so many people don't even know about it or think about it, so it's good to get the word out. You say we were start out talking about black farmers, then, but I know that you work with poor people, as you were saying. So I was wondering what the kind of racial mix is, if there is one, among the people that you work with. Whoever wants to address that.
I tell you that's a good question. I've been with the Federation 30-some years now. I've seen a time where people, because we're talking about organizing cooperatives and poor people, that people did not want people, because we have an organization of color, people did not want to work with us. I've seen times that we were called communists or socialists. I've seen all of that. But also I've seen time when poor people, the least of them, be white, black, yellow, green, didn't have nowhere else to go. They would come to us and we open our arms and provide that technical assistance, provide that training, even provide emergency assistance for them. So I've seen the change as the economy changed. And we're going to see more of this. You know, people are losing jobs. They're losing income. They're losing what wealth they're building, homes and so forth. So we're going to see where a time that people will come together and work together. And we've seen that change. Where I've seen a time that I could not go and get a market for black farmers, but I can send a white person to get that market if he told that people we were trying to sell to, that it's the product belonged to a white farmer. So we've seen that change, and we've worked on it hard. And, of course, our doors are always open for our low-income people, farmers. You know, we are very sympathetic to the remaining 2 million farmers. You know, we know what it is. We've been there. Our farmers have been discriminated against. We've lost land. We've not been able to borrow from banks. We've not enjoyed those things that other farmers enjoy. So we've been there. And we don't wish that on anybody to have to go there. We've seen poor people look, can see the moon and the stars from inside of the house. And we've tried to provide housing, and we're working on that for poor people where nobody should do that. So wealth changed hands. And as that changed hands, people are going to need something like a federation, some type of cooperative system to protect that and their families.
And my guests, Ralph Page and Melba Smith, are from the Federation of Southern Cooperatives Land Assistance Fund. Ralph Page is the executive director of that organization, and Melba Smith is a program director of the Mississippi Association of Cooperatives. Well, we're talking about land changing hands here, and I said at the beginning of the program this affects all of us because we're talking about growing food. And so who grows most of the food is these big corporate farms, or the Archer Daniel Midlands, I guess, being the biggest of all, right? And there's a lot of things that have changed about growing food, and you were just talking about seeds. of course, we have this whole issue of genetically modified food. And I'm wondering how your farmers relate to that issue. How about you? Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, the whole GMO issue is a big issue. And I think, you know, I always say, you know, the cat's out the barn because large companies has done the research, put it on markets and so forth. We are concerned at the Federation across the board. We don't know what's going to happen to GMOs. We don't know the effect on the environment. You know, that is it is a question that researchers and universities should look at. We don't know the effect financially on farmers. We don't know if there's a terminated gene that would destroy the seed supply in this country and it cause famine and that kind of thing. It has not been enough research. I can remember when the bovine additive to milk that was put out there without any regards to research, what it may do to an infant child that would take this milk and do it. And a lot of companies that like Ben & Jerry's ice cream company and many others have responded to the public and stopped using that kind of thing. I think we're going to find that in corn. We're going to find that in GMOs. Certainly, the Federation challenged the universities. We challenge whether they are the land grants, whether they are 1890s or whether they are 1862s, whether it's the University of Davis, California, or whether it's Fort Valley State in Georgia, University of Georgia, Ohio State. It has the public cry need to be looked at. There are some serious questions that has to be answered on this. We owe that to taxpayers. We owe that to America to have the safest. And, I mean, it goes against the grain. We're talking about the safest, the cleanest, the most abundant food in the world and don't have the answers.
Well, I don't know about that if we don't have the answers. I was just hearing earlier today about all the many, many countries that have just refused to use these seeds and are refusing for any food to enter their countries that is genetically modified, and that's so much of American food. So American exports have gone of food have gone way, way down because other countries, not the United States, which is where it comes from, but other countries are taking a stand. So I'm glad to hear
I think you see that in Europe. You see that in right across the country. And the more we see it, I think, you know, it should be a clear message to that. And we don't know. Then other thing, there's a whole question of intellectual property rights. Who owns this? You know, if as we do international development and trade and so forth, who would own that and who controls it? It's a deeper question than that. It's the safety issues. It's the health issues. It's the environment issues. Then it has to do with intellectual property rights. If a company owns the intellectual property right to the production of GMOs, then they control the food system in the world. So I think it's that basic. Who owns that? And I think when we get down to the government, I think the government turned the back. Didn't turn around at all, and this thing got and the cow got out the barn. You know, it's too late to close the door. Everything is coming out on it. But somehow that must be. This Congress must address these issues.
And I think too that each time that there's an issue related to agriculture, the small farmer is the one who really catches the short end of the stick. And that's always in every case. And we talked about that in our conference today at the Bioneers Conference about small farmers and having the right to grow on their own land and to grow those things and having a relationship with the soil and being good stewards of the soil and providing a livelihood for their families. You know, when we were growing up and my father was growing up, then we always had seed corn that we could take and replant for the next year. Because when you plant a seed and that seed dies down and it comes up and it springs up and it makes a stalk of corn, and then there's a lot of ears on that corn and there's a lot of seed that came out of one seed. And we always assumed that that was a healthy seed, that we could use it to reproduce again another crop for next year. We could take what we needed for our families and then for share it with people in the community that didn't have as fortunate as we were, and then we could save some back. So I'm saying that this seems to be the policy in this country that the small farmer really gets the short on the stick or always put at an adverse situation. And I think it's time that needs to be looked at too, because we are, the small farmers are the backbone of this country. The family farm has always been there to provide, to me, the safest food for their families, but not only for their families, but for people in this country.
Are your farmers aware of not using pesticides too much, to that sort of thing?
Yes.
No chemicals?
Yes, yes. And they're also concerned. We were talking at a conference. I heard it. They're concerned about pesticide and how that water runs off into the streams and into the lakes and everything. And they're certainly concerned about that, because small farmers use a variety of means to feed their families. They not only grow fruits and vegetables, but they grow livestock. And then they do go out and they go fishing when it's time to fish, and they may use wild game. But whatever it is that they need to feed their families first and then expand that to others. So they're concerned about those types of things as well. And so even in the Federation, we've been able to share that information. We as staff, the reason that the Mississippi Association and the Federation of Southern Co-op was created by cooperative members was that we as staff people could go out and learn about this information and bring information back to them so that they could make good decisions as regarding to their farms. And I think that's what this country is built on, people having the right to develop their farms and to grow the safest food that they can. If a farmer is growing food for his family, certainly he's going to grow the safest food for his families, right? Mm-hmm. He wouldn't dare, or she wouldn't dare, give anything to their family that would harm them or that they couldn't turn over two or three times to provide a sufficient income for their family. They're concerned about that too. And when we were growing up, I'm from a farm too, and my father and my mother were concerned about their neighbors as well. So if they're concerned about their family, they're surely concerned about the safety of their community, the ones who live next to them. So I think it's an issue that has to be dealt with, as Mr. Page is saying, but it has to be dealt with on that level too. The small farmers have always caught the short end of the stick, and something needs to be done about it, because they are the backbone of this country. I keep saying that, but they are concerned. They're not about profit all the time. They're concerned about making a livelihood and building their communities through cooperatives, as we just finished talking about.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, being closer to the earth and closer to our food supply is a really good thing. And we can grow food in our own gardens in the city even, too.
Right.
But we don't have too much time left, just enough to give the contact information for the Federation of Southern Cooperatives Land Assistance Fund. About that, Mr. Page.
Well, you know, a person wishing to contact us may contact us in two or three ways. One, we're located in East Point, Georgia, 2769 Church Street. The telephone number there is 404-765-0991. You may go to our website at
www.federationsoutherncoop.com. www.federationsoutherncoop.com.
Thank you.
And it's a wonderful website, and soon we will be on the .coop network. And I'm not sure what our letters would be right now, but this is a new domain, and it would soon be on there.
Okie doke. Well, I think we
of course, if you'd like to send contributions, we are a nonprofit organization. If you'd like to send contributions, you may also send them to 2769 Church Street and East Point, Georgia.
Okay, well, thank you very much. Our time's up. Thanks for the interview. It's been very interesting, and I wish you the best. Sounds like great work you're doing. Ralph Page, Executive Director of the Federation of Southern Cooperatives, and Melba Smith, Program Director of the Mississippi Association of Cooperatives. My name's Sue Supriano. Thanks for listening.